Russia attacks a supermarket in Ukraine. Israel strikes a shelter at a school in Gaza as the United States, Egypt and Qatar try and restart peace talks there. Tomorrow is the 75th anniversary of the signing of the Geneva Conventions, the laws of war, what you can and can't do, decided on after World War II and the horrors seen in that conflict. Waikato University's international law professor Dr. Alexander Gillespie is the author of the multi-volume histories on the causes of war and the laws of war. Morena Al.
Kia ora, Jim.
Do they matter anymore, these laws, when we look at Gaza and Ukraine? I mean, do Vladimir Putin and Benjamin Netanyahu care that there are warrants issued from the International Criminal Court for their arrest?
I think they matter more today than at any point of history. We tried to learn from the Holocaust and the aerial bombardment of each other's cities. And what we've been trying to do is get that balance right between military necessity and humanity. But at the moment, we're seeing a lack of humanity and arguably a lot of unnecessary suffering going on.
We hear the Geneva Convention mentioned in warfare, don't we, as in against the rules of the Geneva Convention, that phrase. What did the conventions actually set out to do?
The idea was that we would reconcile the clash between military necessity and humanity to protect the vulnerable and stop unnecessary suffering. And this involves the principle of distinction, that we try to make a difference between civilians and combatants, and that when military use or force is utilised, it's proportionate to the objective that they're trying to achieve.
Okay. In the Ukraine war in Gaza and the preceding October attack on Israel, there have been murder, mutilation, torture, the taking of hostages, rape, intentional attacks against civilian populations, intentional attacks against hospitals, schools. So can I return to that earlier question? What use are the Geneva Conventions if perpetrators can only be brought to book sometime in the future? That seems like diminished disincentive if these cases could take years and years to get to the bottom of, possibly.
Well, if you look at something like the International Criminal Court, which began its work in 2002, you've had 11 convictions and 4 acquittals, which, to be honest, is not a lot of numbers. But it's not just about those people. It's also about getting the record straight for posterity and also hearing the voices of the victims.
When the Ukraine war stops and some sort of peace is negotiated, can peace be brokered on the condition that war crimes can be absolved?
We're in a very difficult point right now because the International Criminal Court, for its first few decades, focused upon African countries and not the larger ones. We're at the time now where we may have to make very difficult decisions because there's no chance of a peace with Russia if Mr. Putin's endpoint is a prison cell in the Netherlands. However, if we make an exception to this, you will find a very selective type of international justice coming into the future.
Okay, so that's a difficult situation. You have a situation in Gaza where Israel knows that civilians will die in its attacks. Its argument, although it's never phrased this way, is that if Hamas hides among civilian populations, what else do you do to destroy them, basically? How much precedence does this have in war, please, particularly since the Geneva Conventions were agreed to?
There is a very strong presumption that areas with civilians in them should not be targeted, but it's not absolute. So whether you've got schools or whether you've got hospitals, that protection can be made irrelevant if it's suddenly got military personnel or military equipment in it. The problem is it doesn't become a chance to do whatever you want in those areas. The response must still be proportionate and you must still try to achieve distinction between the civilians and the combatants.
It's a murky area, isn't it? That's the thing.
It's an exceptionally murky area. But this is why it's so important to make sure that we get the International Criminal Court in there for fact-finding to actually get to the bottom of each situation.
Well, what's the future here? And what about the new wars that we'll quite possibly see up in space or making use of AI and robots? Do we have any idea how to regulate what is coming?
The trend right now is an elasticity in the laws of war, and people are starting to stretch what they think is permissible. But in terms of what we can foresee, it's going to be more urban. There's going to be more dual-use targets. We can expect cyber attacks. It will be more urban. But the big one to worry about is artificial intelligence, because this gives us a speed which is unprecedented in human history. There was an initiative by the United States, France, and Britain to make all the nuclear powers pledge that they would not use artificial intelligence in their nuclear planning and defense capabilities. So far, we're still waiting for a response from China and Russia.
So this is a fairly subdued 75th anniversary tomorrow, isn't it, really?
it's not where we're meant to be in the 21st century. The 1990s was the high point, and it was quite utopian and where we thought we would go. We never thought we would end war, but we did think it would become much more humanized, and those who committed the worst crimes would be held to account.
Yeah. There's been a breakdown also in the rules around assassinations. What were those rules? Were they ever adhered to?
There was a presumption in earlier centuries around chivalry that you would not assassinate the opposition leaders. And these became part of the practice that you would not utilize treachery or perfidy when negotiating with the opposition. Because if you kill those you're negotiating with, you break down all good faith. And that means that, like, if you're talking under a flag of truce, you lose the ability to communicate at the point when you need it most.
Which brings me to another question. Hamas has chosen Yahya Sinwar, its top official in Gaza, who masterminded the October 7 attacks, as its new leader. Iran will strike Israel, presumably for killing the previous leader, Ismail Haniyeh. But Israel will also be motivated to go after Sinwar, won't it? So what happens when you assassinate, in this case? What does that do to that conflict?
Well, you've got the breach of good faith. You lose the ability to negotiate. But then you have to ask, as you develop a situation of no trust in each side, what the objective here. And it seems to me that you're going from discussions about the one-state solution to a two-state solution to now a third option, which is almost the Mogadishu idea, whereby you completely destroy Gaza and you make it inhumane and impossible for civilian populations to remain in that area in the future. It may no longer be about negotiation, but just simply crushing that civilian population.
Professor Alexander Gillespie, thank you very much, and for alerting us to that 75th anniversary of the signing of the Geneva Conventions. Appreciate your time.